Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Hello, Fat Mascara family. I'm Jen.
I'm Jessica.
We've got a great episode. We're super psyched.
Guys, I chilled out with Pat McGrath, and I'm going to fill you in on the deets of the Pat chat. She spilled some serious secrets, some exclusive news, and I want to fill you in. Then, we talk a lot about fillers on this podcast, but some of you rightfully pointed out that we don't talk enough about the downsides and dangers. So I'm going to tell you all about that stuff. So listen up. And then finally, there's a nail decal that could potentially save your life.
Yep. I need that.
I know. So stay tuned.
Our guest today, I have a little crush on him now. It is fragrance publisher Frederick Mall.
Just the title alone.
Right? He was a dream. We learned all about fragrance. And honestly, we got to watch our backs. This man should have his own podcast. It's a great interview. I think you guys are going to love it. So let's get into it.
Jen, in sub-zero degree weather, I put on my little booties and I hit the pavement, and on Friday morning, I went out to see Pat McGrath, but I was hoping to see you.
Oh, I got to see her that day too, but I was in the afternoon session. She's
okay.
Launching fab new product.
That's part of it. Her Decadence palette, one of the Mothership palettes, the fourth one, mm-hmm. And these gorgeous matte trans lipsticks. And you can see me wearing Vendetta on our Instagram. It's a stunning red, and that's coming out the 18th as well.
Yes.
But the real thing was the QT with Pat.
QT?
Quality time.
Like you had one-on-one time with Pat?
Yeah, we had a little cozy couch chat.
Where was I? I did not have one-on-one time with Pat. I was like herded in like cattle with a bunch of other editors.
That's like the thing at these events. Listen, you gotta budge your way in. You gotta budge in.
I think it's your red hair. People remember you. I'm gonna dye my hair red. So what did you learn in your one-on-one with Pat McGrath?
So I had to ask her because, you know, every single time, it's the sequins everywhere. It's the sequins.
Yes.
you know, all over the table. There's not an inch. I always wonder, like, you know, who is the poor intern that has to prop style the set before? Because it's so dense. You know those hard sequins that are in, like, all of the packaging?
Yeah, and how many sequins were killed in the making of Pat McGrath Labs packaging, honestly?
So I said to her, I said, come on, tell me, what's with the sequins? And she said, and I'm not going to do her accent, but it was so fabulous. She goes, she's always been obsessed with shine, sparkle, and dimension. And that's been really like the root of her line.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
She said the concept of her whole line came really quickly. And she said that these, you know, I kind of asked her, I think I alluded to like, oh, cool, like, so we should save them. And she looked at me like I had eight heads. And she's like, darling, of course. She's like, you mean people are throwing them out?
And wait, I was like, what? She thinks people are opening up the little Ziploc bag and then what are we doing with the sequins?
You must save them. The fact that the idea of somebody throwing them out, it looked like I'd wounded her deeply.
What are you going to do? Have like a trash can full of sequins in your house?
Well, she gave me some idea. She said that in her home, she uses them. She puts them like in a jar and then she puts her brushes in them, like her makeup brushes.
Oh, okay.
She said some people use them as candle holders. Like obviously you didn't need something to contain.
Like a mason jar or whatever.
Yes. Oh, I can't imagine a mason jar.
We're doing crafting on Fat Mascara Podcast.
But these sequins. She goes, these are colors that you would not buy straight from the store. These are custom colors to match every... No,
those sequins are custom?
They're custom. They're made specifically to match like each launch. And she said, it was so funny. She goes, you cannot buy these sequins. These are couture sequins.
Okay.
No, she really... I said, where do you get them? She goes, it's top secret couture, which is my new tagline for everything that I don't want to tell people. It's top secret couture. And she said she went through a million like tester sequins before settling on these because different ones didn't have the right shine or they bent. Like, have you noticed? Remember when like
yeah, they're more like little diskettes, sort of.
They're so hard you can't bend them. This was all.
Is this a new Bitcoin? Are we gonna like use these
like,
sequins?
Trade them as currency?
Yeah, and then like in 10 years we're gonna find out it's worth $4 billion.
This is the stuff that she said will really like couture houses. Like they will use these on garments.
All right.
This is not like your, you know. What's that store? I can't think of it.
H&M sequins?
Yeah, you will not find these sequins on like an H&M like party dress. These really are a bit of couture. Then I said to her, all right, lady, your skin, I mean, I look like I was the crypt keeper next to her. I don't know if any of you guys have seen the photo of her on Instagram, but she looks like...
She's glowy AF and that woman doesn't age.
Yeah, it was... Her skin's outrageous. So I said, what are your secrets? She told me that she uses dermatological skincare from her derm doctor, and I'm going to butcher his name, Orentrike. He's on Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
So that is her derm to go to.
We should put a link on the blog.
We're going to put a link because I'm so sorry, doc, that I said it like that. And she goes to Rescue Spa on 19th Street, and she goes to Denuda, gets her facials there, and like so many, I'm sure, of our listeners, she's obsessed with Biologique Recherche.
P50 lotion.
So, and it doesn't surprise me because it looks like I'm looking at like a fresh layer of her skin every time I see her.
Yeah, that's like a peel lotion with, I think, AHAs maybe and BHAs.
I'm not sure what's in it, but I know it smells funky, but it's worth it.
Unicorn
it's very
pee.
Strong.
It's unicorn pee. Couture.
It's top secret couture. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Good secrets.
And I asked her, I said, Pat, do you think you'd ever expand into skincare? Because her eyes lit up when she was talking about this stuff.
Oh, did you get some beauty news?
You know, Pat, she's very coy and she's a very smart businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, at the moment, we're staying with color, but obviously, I'm sure coming soon, who knows? I'm obsessed with skincare. So I would not be surprised if we see something incredible coming out that makes her skin look glowy and fabulous.
Okay, and listeners, give us credit if she does come out with skincare, and let's pretend that we scooped it first. How about that?
I mean...
Couture,
yeah,
people.
Yeah, it'll be top secret. Couture skin. I'm waiting, Pat. We love you.
New year, new segment. We always talk about the plus sides of beauty, but Jess and I want to inform you when there might be side effects or downside. Play beauty detective, if you will. So we're calling this segment, which you will be hearing again, Beauty Private Eye. Jess, doesn't it seem to you, as you're scrolling through Instagram and walking through the city streets, that everybody is getting cosmetic fillers, that they get them very easily. It's almost like you're getting your hair highlighted. Like, mm-hmm. no big deal. Go to the doctor. Do your lips. Maybe a little here, a little there. It just feels like some of us are forgetting that it's a cosmetic procedure.
Yeah, I think
it's not a treatment. It's a procedure.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like it's a cosmetic to people. People are thinking, oh, it goes away. It's fine. It's
right.
Like a fake tanner.
And some of the fillers, yes, there are injections that can reverse them. And we've talked about cosmetic fillers a lot on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned that I have them. I always just talk about the plus sides of it. We've never actually reported on what actually goes into filler and what you need to be concerned about or look at before you yourself get cosmetic filler.
The dangers, the downsides, not the side effects, because everything comes with side effects, but like what can go wrong?
Yes.
Because it's like surgery. I mean, it isn't surgery, but it's like it's a procedure, and procedures have risks.
Right. And thank you to our listeners who actually pointed this out whenever we've spoken about filler. They're like, by the way, guys, don't forget to talk about this. Mm-hmm. So you spoke with your derm, right?
Yes, Dr. Pat Wexler, legend. Mm-hmm. She's seen it all. She's, been doing Botox since it started. She's been doing Juvederm since it started, Restylane since it started. So I had a chat with her the other day, and she was so, basically with us on this. And she's like, absolutely. She goes, 1/3 of her patients actually need to be fixed before she even touches them, because she's fixing bad work from other people.
Not that something went wrong with the side effect. It's just like poorly done.
Yeah, okay. So like you can get really bad work. Doctors don't even, let's just talk about side effects for a second, because that is something really to consider. A lot of doctors don't really inform people about the side effects. And obviously, let's say you want to get Juvederm, Restylane, whatever. You can, as a proactive patient, go and look on their website and see what those things are. But mm-hmm. you're really, let's be pragmatic about this. You're going to rely on your doctor to tell you these things.
Yeah, I get it in a sheet that I have to sign off on, but I'll be perfectly honest, I never read it. I just sign the sheet.
No, of course. There are things like, if you have sinus issues, if you're allergic to sutures, which you probably don't know until shit hits the fan, forgive mm-hmm. me. If you have an autoimmune disease, these things can actually have really serious results once you get the filler.
The other one is if you've been to the dentist. My doctor always says, have you been to the dentist? And they always ask me that. And I'm always like, why? And they're like, because it can cause issues with that.
One of a big complication that can happen is, some people think, when they hear bruising, they're like, oh, okay, don't worry. It's not a big deal. I can just cover it with makeup. But you can actually get a hematoma, which is when it's just a large collection of blood.
Underneath the surface of the skin.
Underneath the surface.
Yeah.
And you're not able to cover that.
Yeah.
You can also get, this one's really scary, a vascular occlusion. And this happens if the filler is injected into the blood vessel mm-hmm. or if so much is injected that it just sits on top of it and then ready. This is like a horror movie. The skin dies.
Really?
Yes. So the skin will initially...
Wait, does she have pictures of any of this? I so want to put gross pictures on her blog.
We can certainly do this. I'm not going to ask Dr. Wexler for these photos.
No, I'll
I'm
find some,
I'm
going
to get some gnarly ones from Google Image.
I need to know what a vascular occlusion looks like immediately.
Okay, so this is how it happens. So the skin will initially turn white since the blood is getting shut off, and that will turn into a dusky gray as it begins to lose oxygen.
It's like frostbite.
Ugh, nasty. So what, here's the thing, is the best injector can have an occlusion. It's
okay.
Statistical. But your injector, you need to have such a good injector that they can recognize the difference between a bruise and an occlusion and know how to reverse it.
Yeah, this is why you do not go to the drive-through place with the nurse on duty
exactly.
that doesn't have the doctor that's never in the office, and you just hope for the best.
So she gave it to your point. She gave me this funny expression, like a little derm humor. She goes, they have an expression in the business.
What?
It's not the filler. It's the filler. Like
the person doing the filling.
Exactly. So Dr. Wexler says she uses hyaluronic acid fillers about almost 100% of the time, because if you use anything other than a hyaluronic acid filler, it's not an immediate reversal. So she
right. So like if you use Restylane, which is a hyaluronic acid filler, and something goes wrong, they can inject that enzyme that reverses it, where the calcium ones like Radiesse or something, you have that.
She
not permanently, until it fades. Yeah.
She uses
hyaluronase. That's the...
Hyaluronase. She uses... Hyaluronidase.
That's what all the doctors use to inject a hyaluronic acid filler and reverse it.
She has that in the room as a precaution. Ooh. So she doesn't have to wait 15 minutes to leave, go to the lab and get it.
Okay.
So, you know, that is the sign of an experienced dermatologist who's like, doesn't have it kicking out in the back. If she sees something that looks like a vascular occlusion, she has it right there to like fix it, bam. But if you have someone who thinks, hey, this looks like a bruise, and then sends you on your merry way,
yeah,
or, you know, runs out to the back to go get it, you're in trouble.
So right now we got to ask, what are the side, if you're getting injected, what are the side effects? Has your doctor done it before? Can you reverse this particular filler, mm-hmm, if something goes wrong?
Exactly.
And how will you know if something has gone wrong? I think they need to have answers immediately for all those questions,
all those
before
things,
you get injected.
You know, Dr. Wexler mentioned a few more that were pretty gnarly, but, you know.
Side effects, yeah.
Pretty gnarly side effects, pretty gnarly risks. But, you know, no one can say these things will never happen. But you can really lessen your chance if you find a good derm. So I asked her how to find a good derm, and she said you can really only go by the reputation of the physician. So she said ask your friends, ask them who their derm is. They don't necessarily need to get the same procedure that you're looking to get. And then I thought this was a really good tip. Ask your gynecologist.
Oh.
She said they very often, you know, talk to her patients, and, you know,
yes,
they've historically been great at recommending people.
And also a previous guest told us to ask your hairdresser or your,
oh, yes,
stylist, because not only do
Sharon Durham.
Yeah, she did say not only do they see good work, but they're plugged into your community of aesthetic people, like, mm-hmm, wherever you live, so they're going to know who to send you
and
to.
And they know bad work, because if they're pulling back people's hair,
yes, they do.
They,
or
can see no
little,
good.
Or they might little see the little vascular occlusions or whatever.
Exactly. So, you know, we're happy to talk about this stuff and, you know, inform you guys about like new fillers and everything, but it is a serious procedure. So, you know, think twice.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
I need to laugh. And when the sun is out.
So Jess, back in 2016, La Roche-Posay, that L'Oreal skincare brand, they came out with a UV patch, that sensor, remember, that tells you how much sun exposure you're getting?
Yes.
They found that people that were using it, consumers, ended up 34% applying sunscreen more often, and 37% of the people that were using it tried to get in the shade more. So say what you will about wearing a little patch on your skin, but like, it really does affect behavior.
I love that.
But also, who wants to be putting like a nicotine patch on their skin? So this summer, breaking some beauty news here, La Roche-Posay is going to be doing UV Sense, which is teeny tiny. I think it's 2 millimeters by 9 millimeters. It's a nail decal.
I love that.
It's, so what it'll do is you put it on your nail. You can wear it much longer than the patch because it's not just a couple of days. You could be wearing it for like a week or two. And it uses
it's
that.
Waterproof, obviously.
Yes. And it hooks to an app. Well, it doesn't hook. The air. It goes through the air like magic to your app.
The cloud?
Yeah, I'm explaining the science.
This is crazy. Okay.
No cloud. It's actually called near field communication enabled technology.
Okay.
And it'll tell you when you are getting a lot of UV exposure. So you can use the app so you'll wear it for like a week and you could see, okay, I've been getting in the sun too much.
Genius. How much is this thing?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that because I reached out to the company and I was like, I need to know where, when, whatever. They're like, the most we could tell you is it's coming in summer 2018.
Oh my God, I'm there. I would wear this.
Yeah,
I would absolutely wear this. I need to be scared.
I think so too.
I need to be scared.
There's something about the skin one that I was like, all right, I don't know. I don't care that much. But remember what my New Year's resolution was?
Wear SPF more vigilantly.
I'm going to try to do that, but I'm going to get the decal because just the fact of you putting that on makes you more aware. If then I'll be wearing sunscreen 35% more of the time. I'm sort of like doing myself a favor.
I also love that it will be, you know, seeing that on someone's hand will be a conversation starter and make SPF more of a like, I mean, there's nothing like bad about it, but I think it will normalize like wearing SPF and being...
Yeah, it's cool. It's almost like
it's
wearing
like, yeah,
the Nike...
the armband, the thingy.
Yeah, we sound like our mothers right now. That Nike...
That thingy. That
Apple
crazy,
thingy.
That
Fitbit. No? Yeah.
Yeah, the Fitbit. It's,
okay.
It's like, you know, I care...
It's cool to be healthy.
Yeah, I care about my health. Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, if you're dressing up and whatever, it's so tiny that you could not see it. Like, it's on your nail. It's not like it's a patch.
Yeah.
So it can go either way. But once I get mine, and you're going to get one too...
Oh, my God.
I'm going to be showing it to everybody.
Goldfinger. This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
He's the man. A cold finger.
On Fat Mascara, we always talk about perfumers. We give them we basically make them heroes. But I think the person who started this all is the man sitting across me right now in this gorgeous, what do you call this, tweed jacket?
It is a tweed jacket.
It's wonderful. Yeah, I love it. We're going to have to discuss this jacket later. We're with Frederick Mall today. We have the divine privilege. Frederick, thank you so much for coming to Fat Mascara.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. It's
a privilege.
We should have had like a scented Mall candle here. I feel really like, I know that would have really upped
you can
the elegance.
You can
here.
Send us one later.
I can.
Okay.
We'll have to discuss that. We're actually coming up with a new packaging, which is going to be beautiful.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ooh. What's it like?
It's going to be made of porcelain.
Mm, okay.
It's going to be very nice.
All right. Don't drop it. Uh-oh. So you're referred to as a perfume publisher.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, the perfume publisher's story is just an analogy. I realized that at the beginning of my company, when I was just working on those perfumes with perfumers, that my relationship to them was very similar to one of a publisher with his artists, with his writers.
Mm-hmm.
And people generally don't know our business. They don't know what a perfumer is. They don't know what an evaluator is. So I thought, let's use that analogy to say that I'm dealing with artists that, unlike perfumes usually, I mean, that especially in those days, we started in 2000. Perfume had become really mundane then. This time I wanted to use that analogy to say we're dealing with works of art made by artists and explain my job, which, and my role, if you want, which is sort of adapted to each of my perfumers' personality, and which is to sort of coach them to go as far as possible in their own endeavors. So I then was baptized like a perfume publisher, but in fact, what I am in life is a perfume art director. It's another way to put it.
Okay, so you said coaching them. That's funny. That's like a funny word to
Well,
describe this.
You know, I've been doing this for many, many years. when you go to professional labs, you have people like me that work with perfumers. It's a very lonely job to be a perfumer. You formulate, you smell, you reformulate, you re-smell. After a day of that, you can't remember even your name. I mean, you're completely lost. So you need someone to talk to and to exchange about your own work. Mm-hmm. And I was that kind of person. So I'm like a sparring partner.
You mentioned the word evaluator. What does an evaluator do?
That's the sparring partner.
That's
the evaluator.
Okay.
Traditionally, evaluators were a bit like librarians. They knew most of the perfumes that those perfumers in those perfume stables, if you want, I mean those perfume labs, were making. And when someone was looking for a particular perfume, they would dig into their perfume library.
Yes.
So yes, again, it's the literary
literature analogy. Keeps going.
Yes, exactly. It's okay. Strange, isn't it? Remember that we don't have a language, a perfume language.
Yeah.
We always borrow from music, from literature, from painting, from food. So we're very poor in this sense. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so an evaluator is someone that keeps that library and then sometimes readapts it and is the sort of sparring partner for perfumers.
Got it.
So they are like an in-house critique. I became an external critique. And because I have done that for so many years, I had the possibility to call the best perfumers in the industry and convince them quite easily, actually, to follow me and into that endeavor, which was, you know, the first company that would publish perfumes under their names. My company's name is Edition Parfum Frédéric Malle.
Exactly. Which is probably what you guys know when you see it in the stores, right?
Now, exactly. So you started as an evaluator?
Right? I started in a lab, and I was selling perfume and evaluating them, yes.
Are most evaluators, were they perfumers before, or you don't have to be a perfumer
You
to
don't
be an
have
evaluator?
To be a perfumer.
Okay.
You have to know how to smell, though, and you have to know how to describe what you are smelling. So you have to know the raw materials, you have to know perfume structures, you have to know accords, and it's a slightly different fiber that you need. You need to speak the language, but you also need to know how to translate it and cater it to a fashion designer, for instance.
Mm, yeah.
So you are this sort of go-between.
You're
That's
like
what
the
middleman. I was doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So where did you get your training for that if you didn't train like a perfumer would?
I got a very unique training, actually. I'm one of a kind.
Of course you are.
I mean, you don't seem so convinced. I'm going to prove it to you. First of all, I was brought up in this industry because my mother was working for Christian Dior. She was smelling perfumes for them. She was like a local art director on products. So we were always immersed in this, my brother and I. So I didn't really have the language, but I had smelled perfumes, and I was I was always shown perfume all my life. Then I desperately tried to become a playboy when I was like 15, something like that. And very respectable, though. But a good-smelling playboy. And I realized that perfume was such a great help to make me attractive.
Yeah.
And I also realized how addictive perfume was then. So I had a head start. And then I was minding my own business in the advertising industry, and someone who was running one of the best labs in perfumery asked me to come and join him and work for him as his assistant. And that lab, which was called Roux, which now is merged with a big thing called Givaudan, had its own perfumery school where I spent a few weeks. I didn't spend a very long time. But then I was sent back to Paris to the lab, and I was sort of locked up in a room for months to learn all the different essences, all the different accords. And the best perfumers of the time, a man like Edouard Fléchier, for instance, who is one of the perfumers I have in Edition Parfum, who had just made Poison, who had made Montana, who was a huge star, and a few others, were generous enough to teach me the drill.
Yeah.
So I had like private courses every night by the best perfumers in the industry. I mean, during the day, I was sort of sent to my demise, and I had to smell everything. I still have that notebook where I made all my notes in my office today, actually.
Wow. Did you ever think, I want to go be a perfumer now that I've done this?
You know, to be honest, first of all, I was never at the level of a perfumer, and I was always destined to be that funny breed, which is that sort of in between, between fashion designers and perfumers.
Got it.
My boss in those days was saying there are two kinds of salespeople, the one that would sell, you know, a secondhand car, and the ones that think that they are perfumers. Unfortunately, you are of the second kind.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time with perfumers because I was, in fact, a very bad salesperson.
Okay.
But I wanted to make sure that they had the best thing, so I didn't make any effort to sell it.
So
it sold on its own because it was very good. So I was a perfectionist from day one.
You really, you know, it's clear just from your line, like, how much you love working with perfumers and how much you respect them. And just, you know, looking at your website, it's really cool. It kind of reminds me, and, like, don't laugh at the analogy, but did you ever see Ocean's 11?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, everyone has their own little personality, and you're introduced to the different characters, and it's like, this person's, like, the more rebellious one. This person's the quirkier one. What can you tell us a little bit about some of the perfumers you work with? Like, what are they like?
Well, as you said, they're all very different, and I have a very different.
It's like casting a movie.
First of all, the casting was done. Not only they were the best perfumers, but there are people that love their business, and when you work with them, you have this very, very odd rhythm. You smell. I mean, you concentrate. You smell. You smell with your in a very innocent way. Your entire self is to decide what he likes or doesn't like. So it's a very intense moment. And then you shift to the other side of your brain, and you, and when you speak the language like I do, you explain to the perfumer what you like and what you don't like, in much more technical terms. So it's left brain, right brain all the time.
Like down to the molecule.
It's like emotional and then analytical?
It's exactly. So it's first emotional, then you forget emotion, you do analytics after analyzing your emotion. Then you reformulate with the perfumer. Basically, you change the formula according to our comments, and we have a conversation about, you know, what we like, what we don't like. Is it too much of this or not too much of that, et cetera, et cetera. And then you send the trials to the lab. So the lab takes between 10, 15 minutes and an hour to come back with something. So either you work on a different project or you chat. Many of them are from the south of France.
They are
mega chatters.
Yeah.
I mean, gossip. It's gossip guys beyond. And about the business. And then, because we love our business, we talk shop. It's quite simple. And, you know, the formula of this, and this one did that, and isn't that clever, or that was stupid, that we have smelled it 10 times before, and so on. So I realized that out of this conversation, there was a list of characters that always came back.
Perfumers?
Perfumers. Pierre Bourdon, who invented cool water, was seen as a real modernist and one of the heirs of Rudnitska, a great technician who brought modernity to Rouen, with Jean-Louis Cieuzac, who was another one, who did opium, who did tons, Valentino, Oscar de la Renta, and so on. Dominique Ropion, who today is probably the best living perfumer, was then a beginner, but already seen as a genius because he was formulating in such a bold way and a different manner than anybody else in the industry, and so on. So I made a cast of characters out of those conversations, because also what's fabulous in this business, although it's very competitive, they all work on the same briefs. And there's always one winner. I mean, you know, you have silver medal, you go home with your perfume. And
the Michael Kors that never was.
Exactly.
and so sad.
Exactly.
How long do they spend working on, like, a fragrance, like a brief, like a proposal? So if everyone's working on the brief for the next big Michael Kors, are they spending like a month on it or like a year on it? 2 weeks?
Oh, it's an impossible question because things have changed so much.
Okay.
in the old days, it was about a year, and we would sort of, we would generally begin from almost a white sheet of paper, or we would start from perfume that had been done for someone else.
Oh.
And we would take pieces of it,
right,
or recut it like a dress, literally, mm-hmm. Or make it more complicated or simplify it, the contrary. But we really started from nowhere. But we were beginning from things which we thought was right for that designer, for that brief. Now what labs do for these big mammoth briefs, I mean, their goal is to win the test.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that there's going to be that focus group and you have to win. So first they want to know who is going to be the benchmark, who is going to be that market product that they're going to that the client is testing against. So according to what they are going to use as a benchmark, they have an array of perfumes that they know will test better than that. So they first understand the...
So unartistic.
Oh, it's not artistic at all. I mean,
it's
those
like
mass
having
perfumes,
a jury with lawyers and picking the right jurors. And
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's no, a good analogy, this is why I did my started my company in 2000, because I was so sick of that and so bored.
Wait, let me ask you this though: are any of your fragrances the would have been Michael Kors's, or are they new, beautiful things that just never found a home?
There's only one called Musc Ravageur, mm-hmm. that could have been a big product and was not made for me. And
repeat the name again.
It's called Musc Ravageur.
Okay. Oh,
and the story
is
actually quite amusing.
That's a big one.
It's a big one. Yeah, yeah. Maurice Roussel, who is the author of Musc Ravageur, who we have become very good friends since, but was one of the great perfumers that I had never worked with. And I had worked with 90% of them. And Pierre Bourdon, who had been working with him, told me, listen, you know, you should call him because he's very talented. He has this amazing bold style, and you'll get along. So I called him, and he came to see me, and I told him, you know, free rein, forget money, forget time, forget market tests. This is like a publishing house.
Yeah.
And you can express yourself fully. And if you need my help, you have it. If you want to work on your own, fine. And so Maurice came back to me a few weeks later, and said, I have something for you. It's the best perfume that I've ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bold for the market. I've made it for, and I won't name the person.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us.
No, oh, my God, I
for,
know.
For very, it was one of the boldest fashion designers in France in those days. But
what,
in fact,
what year is this?
It was designed in 1998.
And he held on to it because it
and
didn't
make
it. And
he held on to it. And now we are in 1999,
mm-hmm.
and he knows that this thing is so politically incorrect that, and it was done for this very bold French fashion designer,
mm-hmm.
that he thought, you know, maybe he will take it, and of course he ran away shit scared. And I'm not supposed to.
No, you can. And Frederick's like, I'll take it.
and you know what? And it's funny how those marketing people are. They so amber, warmth, animatic note, like a fur coat.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, shocking. In those days where we are all supposed to make watery little lilies.
Yeah, these are the days of like CK1 and
exactly,
all that.
Exactly, just after that. And I saw it as something reminiscent of Emeraude and Ambre Antique, which are great Coty perfumes,
mm-hmm.
that were the perfumes that influenced Shalimar, which is a fabulous classic. And I thought, now this is like going back and then mm-hmm. forward with our modern day
Redux.
Raw material.
Yeah.
And this is fur coat galore. It's like,
super
great
elegant.
Help for a wonderful sexy night.
Sexy.
And so I just asked him for a few mods. Because basically it was like as if you were getting a visit from someone who was already naked, like ringing the buzzer. So I told him, listen, you know, little foreplay can do. It's so, I mean,
it was too much.
Scared everyone. I mean, you know, nice little introduction. And so he was pissed off. And then he agreed that I was right. And he did it. But long story short, this is the Miss Caravaggio story.
Yeah.
It was made initially for someone else. And it was, I think, the only one. Parfum Thérèse, which was made by Mr. Rudnitska in the 50s and seen as his masterpiece, mm-hmm. was made for himself. I think he proposed it to my grandfather at Dior in the late 50s. My grandfather died. No one at Dior after that had the guts to buy it. And his wife was the only one to wear it for all these years. And it became one of the legend of our business because Mrs. Rudnitska always smelled so good and she would never admit to what she was wearing and it was their secret. Mm. And they gave it to me because they were so touched that I came up with this idea of sort of putting perfume forward.
And which one is that? I'm sorry.
It's called Parfum, Le Parfum de Thérèse.
Okay.
It's beautiful. So, yeah. It's like, it's very much like Paris in the 50s, but done with sort of Photoshop, because in those days, people didn't use those water fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first one that has melon and cucumber and all of that stuff, which came in perfumeries basically in the 90s.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, we took you on a turn, but you mentioned that, you know, when you started it, it was because you were working with all of these perfumers, the best of the best of the mm-hmm. best.
Yeah.
And was that like, you know, the light bulb moment where you're like, okay, I need to put their own non-market driven fragrances out? Was there something else?
No, the something else was very true. Was very present. We were amazingly bored, not to say completely depressed. I couldn't go to Pierre Bourdon, who is the perfumer that I was the closest to in those days, without having this sort of litany of complaints of, you know, the art director of such or such house is gone.
But now this is like when you're having your gossip sessions.
Yeah, okay. Gossip sessions. Gossip sessions are huge in perfumery.
Is it because it's such a small industry?
Yes.
We
all know each other. And yeah. I was brought up into it, and mm-hmm. I had been into it for already almost 15 years. So, yeah, we knew everybody. And it was a small world of people that knew how to make perfumes. The chairman of Dior, Maurice Roger, was a genius at making perfumes. There was a woman called Chantal Ross, who was very, very good, who made, you know, the big YSL perfumes and all that. There was a cast of characters that perfumers looked forward to working with because they knew that they would drive them to become better and to make very finished, highly defined, new and recognizable, highly recognizable perfumes. And then now, these people were replaced by guys that came from P&G that sold cat food the year before, and now they are sort of, you know, running a big French fashion house making perfume.
And it's all about the bottom line.
And it's about the bottom line. It's about the test.
It's happened to so many industries, music, media. It's a similar story.
It's all driven by distribution.
Mm-hmm.
The minute perfumeries, especially in Europe, were run by individuals that had done that from generation to generations, who really knew about perfume, who'd see you coming in, look at your dress, look at the way you behave, look at the way you do your hair, wondering if you are a loud person or a quiet person. I mean, all these things that mm-hmm. we communicate, they would know within 5 seconds what sort of perfume to give you.
Hmm.
And if they had a doubt, they would ask you, what was your perfume history? And they would know that you have been wearing patchouli all your life or Lily of the Valley or whatever, because they knew all those perfumes.
Right.
So it's like a mathematical formula for them. And they would say, oh, have the latest by Dior, it's exactly what you want. Or have the latest by YSL, it's what you want.
And they'd be right.
Mm-hmm. And this is why all these great brands were free and actually encouraged to make perfumes that were very, very specific. The minute these go-betweens, this fabulous service, in fact, which mm-hmm. we all took for granted, disappeared and was replaced by rows of
Sephora.
Perfume,
yeah.
you know, on a black and white shelf.
Yeah, by like you think you order. Want that, but then you miss out on all that great service.
You know, it came from Germany, a very puritanical country,
yeah.
Where perfumery was not a tradition. and a company called Douglas.
I worked for Douglas.
Right. Well, this Douglas invented that.
Yeah.
And Douglas
open cell formula or exactly. whatever. Yeah.
And they were there was a slight, and I believe they believed in it. There was a slight moral stand on this because they were saying, you know, don't be pressurized by these.
Like a gatekeeper.
Yeah, by these aggressive salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Just find whatever you want.
Yeah.
But
come in and find out. That was our tagline.
Yes.
I kid you not. That's what we had to say.
Exactly.
Come in and find out.
Exactly. But I think it was very genuine.
Yeah.
But it's like people never saying no to their children. And in fact, their children are completely lost.
Because they don't know anything.
They don't know anything. Yeah. They have no boundaries.
They're simple.
So when people, you know, not everybody was as lucky as I am or as I was to be brought up in the perfume industry.
Mm-hmm.
So people, I mean, it's a language that people do not know, and for obvious reasons. So they walk in, they're completely lost. So they will be sort of drawn by the image, and then they will ask their best friend to come with them, and therefore the perfume houses, I mean the perfume brands, would have to generate an event, ally with a star,
free celebrity, gifts or something.
Free gifts,
make
or
something neutral enough that multiple women would think
so
it was okay.
You have a hook to get people in, celeb. Event, all of that.
There's air quotes happening.
Exactly. And then...
and a look of disdain.
And then, well, whatever. You know, I'm nothing against them.
Yeah.
But the thing is that then you do something which is the one-size-fits-all common denominator. Yeah.
And everything starts to smell the same.
Exactly. And then you don't need the great perfume experts that we had in those brands anymore. You need guys that know how to deal with the sort of supermarket order.
Right.
Because that's the
give me a white technique. Floral with a fruit side of fruit or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Give me something that beats your J'adore. It's as simple as that. They don't even know that it's floral or anything.
Hmm.
And
is that really the kind of language that people are using?
Yeah, they hardly dress it. Yeah. So it's very simple. So when you are in love with this business, when this is a big part of your life, you're quite depressed. And so my idea was very simple. I just told these, I mean, my reaction was, you know, stop complaining. We're just, it's a huge opportunity for us. We're just going to show people what perfumery can be.
Mm-hmm.
And
they'll come around.
Instead of making things super basic, one size fits all, like an extra springy underwear, we are going to make, at the contrary, very high end, very high perfumery.
Yeah.
We'll be more inventive. We are going to put even more money than we used to in perfume. We're going to take our time, and we're going to make the perfumers of our dreams. And if possible, as you know, there are great families of perfumes, like tuberose, like sheep, like all of that. We'll take them and we'll make them go much further.
Mm-hmm.
We'll reinvent them. Or we'll do something completely new. Let's reinvent the wheel. It's fun.
The perfumers must have been ecstatic when you said
exactly.
Oh,
that's why I was saying previously that it was a very easy sell.
Yeah.
Because I went to Pierre Bourdon, who actually his reaction was quite amusing. And you were asking me about people's characters. He had been copied so much for Cool Water that he says, we are going to be ripped off. They're going to copy us. It's going to be horrible. And then he came back to me and said, you know what? The key will be to have a central raw material, which will be so expensive that they are going to have great difficulty copying it. So this is how we did iris poudre, which is made around a big slug of iris, which is very expensive.
Mm.
And if you copy iris poudre, either you put the money or you get
a cheapo version.
Yeah,
we wanted to ask you about that. Your fragrances are a bit more expensive than...
Yes, because they're way more expensive to make.
And so what is it that's going into that cost? A raw material like aris, which is like... Then it gets fermented and it gets dug up and you have to wait 3 years and
exactly.
all that.
Exactly. So you have that. But it's not that you have 0.0001.
I can't remember. Load of it in there.
It's like 3%, something like that. So it's... Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a... an enormous amount.
People have to think about like the raw materials going into these little bottles, like the fields of iris flowers or the pounds of rose petals.
Carnal flower.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big one for you guys, huh?
Yeah, it's a big one for us. It's done with a tuberose, which you can only find in India. Now, Indians are using tuberose mostly for gifts and religious ceremonies. Mm-hmm. So the perfume business is a small part of the tuberose industry in India. So generally, these things are recuperated. In fact, we work with people that pick them just for perfumery at a certain time when the flower is just open in at a very, very precise time, so that basically when you distill it, you get the best of it. Tuberose blooms twice a year. I think it blooms in October and in May or something. The good bloom is in October, if my memory doesn't fail me. We only buy flowers that are coming from the October harvest. So that's basically insane. You get the best oil.
Yeah.
And then at one point we had to stop because there was not enough tuberose flower in India. And instead of having a lesser crop...
You were just... No carnal flower this season.
We just...
It's like wine or something.
Yeah, exactly. But then we managed to organize for later years. Then this oil, it's actually an absolute, comes to grass. Actually, I think they do a concrete. And then they take the concrete to grass. They turn it into an absolute. And then for us, and I think we are the only ones to do that, they do what's called a molecular distillation, where they take the unwanted parts away.
Yeah.
So we have something which is way more pure than any other brands on
the
market.
Would a layperson smell the difference between that and just like...
Well, yeah.
You would. Wow. You just know it would be better. And you wouldn't know why.
If you have the two next to one another, it's obvious. And the other thing is that because it has the molecular distillation, there are some spices in there which are not allowed by rules and by IFRA and European regulations. It's isoeugenol. So it's has much less isoeugenol, so you can put more tuberose. So this is why carnal flower is already based on way more naturals than any perfume in the industry. So imagine you have the best tuberose, it's molecularly distilled, so already you multiply the price by two because half of it goes to the bin, goodbye. And then you put way more of it. So in the end, you have a perfume which costs 10, 15 times more than any perfume in the industry.
Just from the raw materials.
Yeah, and we sell it. It's our most expensive perfume.
How much is it?
I think it's $400 a bottle.
So
for 100 ml.
Or
380. I'm terrible with prices.
We'll put it on the blog. We'll double check.
when your line came out, it felt very, it was very much one of the only lines that I would say, like, well, this is niche perfumery. This is, the kind of fragrance you can only get in one of, your boutiques, and this is like artisanal, top quality, yada, yada, yada. Now we're seeing so many brands that call themselves niche perfumery. Does that mean anything to you? They all kind of have the same, similar price point to you, but you were the originator. What do you think about this whole category?
Someone told me the other day something that made me laugh. He says, God will recognize his children eventually.
Damn! Burn!
Mic drop!
Okay, well, I guess we know your thoughts on that. Okay, you straightened up, too. This is where we really need a video.
Can we talk about these raw materials a little bit more? Because you just mentioned a lot of things to me that smell really sexy. And I feel like you're
carnal flower.
Yeah, but that's the fun.
Yeah, I mean, you like to
sex
make
in a bottle.
Do you think that's...
This is my business.
Do you think that's the only
point... You're in the business of sex.
He's so sexy.
Absolutely.
Do you think that's the only purpose perfume?
His publicist smelled very sexy walking in, Mary. I know. I gave her a
but
hug.
She's naturally sexy. It's
Yes, yeah. She is.
But do you think that's the only reason people wear fragrance?
Yes. And if I had to sort of give a yes or a no, yes.
Interesting.
I think that we are basically animals of seduction. That's my big theory in life. And we each have our ideal of seduction. Some people want to have a loud seduction. Some people want to be more discreet. Mm-hmm. But it's we are trying to be a sort of ideal self, right. Version of ourselves.
Sure.
And the way to be that best version of ourselves matches a perfume. So you can wear Bigarade Concentré and smell mostly citrus and have this feeling of long-lasting freshness as if you were walking out of your shower for about the entire morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to match your immaculate look and your perfect hair and your quite white teeth and, you know, that sort of sports.
Go
look.
On.
I know. I'm like,
he's not talking about us.
I'm not talking about you, I'm afraid.
No. I thought he was. Confirm. I was like, Jen has very white teeth.
And but the rest is different.
Wait, now I'm going to tell you which of your fragrances I wear. I want to know what that says, but continue.
Yeah, well, we'll come to you. don't be impatient. And then, you know, there are people that like to sort of almost perfume themselves for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of going back almost to their childhood. And it's not really...
he's looking at you and he's
a
right.
A big seduction.
Oh, you're a cocooner with your perfume.
But then if you're a cocooner, then it's yet something else. I mean, we are all different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
they don't sound very sexy then. Cocooners are not very sexy then, is it?
I mean, this is, you know, they're sexy cocooners, I imagine. Oh.
Well, they must be out there silk. Somewhere.
Yeah, like.
But it's a different approach to sex. Sex doesn't have to be high heels and sort of S&M and, you know, walk over me. I mean.
That's the carnal flower people.
No. Carnal flower people are much brighter than that.
Okay.
It's more sort of California.
Which fragrance is the S&M high heel one?
No, I'm not gonna go into that. I mean, you know.
Wait, then tell me.
We are in a moment with such political correctness.
Okay.
I have to be extremely careful.
Yeah, that's
what
right.
I'm saying.
You're right.
Well, okay.
Only girls in that room. My God.
Sorry.
I like to sell some fragrance.
I wear Angelique Sula
Sweet. Pri.
What does that mean?
That you like textures.
Texture.
That you don't like something. I'm surprised. I thought you'd be a sort of notch up. You like something fairly quiet.
It's my hangover perfume, actually.
Ah, you see, now you're talking.
It's like because I wear perfume every day, but if it's...
But
like,
it's not something that you would go out with.
No. It's my everyday morning, and I maybe had a little too much to drink, and it just freshens me up and just makes me feel like...
It's fresh. It's sort of dynamic.
It's like a gin and tonic. It's a little hair of the dog.
Well, it smells like gin and tonic.
It does
because
to me.
There's a hell of a lot of juniper in there.
Oh, I wasn't wrong.
Why would you be wrong? You sort of seem so surprised.
I don't know.
You're a clever girl.
Well, because I'm talking to the guy who helped create it, and I'm calling it gin and tonic. It's much lovelier.
And you're
than
on the money.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah.
So you can hire me. We'll talk later.
but in the evening,
yes.
You would be much more Portrait of a Lady or something way deeper than that.
Okay, I'll check
that's
that
a beautiful
one out.
Fragrance. What
even maybe Miss Carvajal.
Mm.
What do you think is the sexiest smell?
Personally.
Yeah.
There are many, many sexy smells. It's like saying, you know, the most beautiful color for a painter.
Right.
It depends what you do with it. In terms of raw material, it's first of all we make those compositions. Some are more sexy than others. But then you know, I'll never forget this black girl crossing Madison Avenue when I was a starving student here in the 80s. And it's the first time I smelled Giorgio. And I was like, oh, wow.
Like, she was 200 whoa. Yards away and I could smell it.
And you know what? I was on the other side of the block. Yeah.
That kind of fragrance.
It was like, wow, this is incredible. And the whole image was to die for.
Yeah.
And I have the same... with people very close to me, actually wearing Portrait of a Lady,
mm-hmm.
or wearing Carmen Flower, or Miss Cravageur, and all that. But they're all their different versions of sexy. And thank God there are so many ways to be sexy. And it'd be so boring to be, you know, to have that routine and loving always the same person and the same perfume. And You know, we are all about diversity. But I think what's very important is to be yourself in life. And to have the not to try to smell like your best friend or someone on TV. Actually, you don't know what people on TV smell of, but really smell of. But you want to have a perfume that you're really comfortable with, because if you have that, there are many chances that it will work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the combination of a person and the right perfume that's for her or him that makes them sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very important. There's not one ultimately sexy perfume.
Yeah. Are there any particular notes that you're sort of over right now, that there's too much of, either in the marketplace or even with the perfumers that you work with? Like, please don't give me another gardenia or whatever.
No. Bless you. I'm honestly, what I'm bored with, but I never liked it, so it's easy to be bored. Is this a code that you find in sort of cheapo perfumes that have an addition of those 20 raw materials that are conventions and always put together in a different proportion, because together they test well, they are quite cheap because they have been patented for a long time, so now they can be made in the Far East somewhere, and they win tests, and it's that thing that people put in, like Muzak, is that it's sort of back noise.
I
hate the back
like
noise.
Is it like a warm feeling?
Yeah, warm, creamy, a bit floral, a bit musky, a bit woody.
I have a lot of perfumes every week, and yes, you're like, oh, it's the same one.
And it's that back noise I hate. Mm.
But do we know? Do you know what it is? But you just like,
I know
it's
how
too
it's
technical.
Made.
It's like 20 molecules that work
it's
together.
It's 20 molecules that are put together in a different order and with different proportions. But it's roughly always the same. And there are things that in there that, ooh, I hate.
Yeah.
It's
so funny.
And it's funny because individually, I use all these molecules.
Right.
They're great.
Right.
But the whole
together,
mishmash.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's
so
sad.
Funny. So where do you get, when you're doing this day in, day out, it must be so... I just kind of can't imagine, like, you're booking the same perfume with the same perfumers, the same, like, well, different jumbles of notes. Where do you kind of, like, clear your head and, like, get, like, new, fresh, creative inspiration?
It's a good question. Probably on vacation. Mm. Doing nothing.
Where's your spot?
Reading.
Where do you like to go?
I do all sorts of vacations. I travel a lot. I'm going to Mexico for Christmas, for instance. In the summer, I spent time in Biarritz, where I grew up, and I sort of disconnect. And sometimes, you know, you have that. You can also smell a flower occasionally. And you're like, oh, this is cool, and maybe I could do something with that. I mean,
really
I remember
disconnect?
Coming here.
Like you're offline? Like you really disconnect?
I'm not. I actually truly disconnect.
Okay.
Yeah. And now when you're on vacation in Mexico, what's in the toiletry bag? Like, do you wear cologne or a fragrance every day?
Yes.
What do you wear?
Actually, this is when I wear fragrances.
Yeah, vacation. Because
yes.
You're not at work.
Because I'm not at work. Because when I'm at work, usually...
No evaluating.
Yeah, unless there is one thing that I need to live with a little bit, which is either almost finished or question mark or something that, you know, Dominique of that world will sort of ask me to check out. And then... Because I have 4 children, meaning, and a wife, meaning 5 potential guinea pigs. I spray on them.
Yeah. So what are you wearing personally then?
I wear a lot of Geranium pour Monsieur.
Mm-hmm.
I wear this perfume, which I adore, called Monsieur, which is this deep, leathery patchouli, which is very nice.
Who's...
It's done by Bruno Jovanovic.
Okay.
And it has rum absolute in it, which is very
goes with your tweed
cool.
jacket.
Yeah.
I feel
actually,
like.
It does.
Yeah.
even more serious than that.
Yeah.
And, I wear a lot of our vetiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have all these little travel sprays, and you know, there is this saying in French saying that the shoemaker is always having the worst shoes. I'm not that type.
No.
Okay. Well perfumed.
That's like beauty editors so wearing their makeup
right now. You're like beaming.
And I wear the bigger ad also. So these are my go-to usually.
And what about non-fragrance? What about your skincare regime? Do you have one? It's fat mascara. Come on, we have to ask.
It's, like, it's not just water.
I wear sometimes when I have to sort of look decent, I wear this little Tom Ford sort of around the eye contour thing, which is sort of nice. What I wear every day is my... I made the best shaving cream in the industry. Sorry, guys. But
don't be sorry.
It's
Is it l'Edition Frederick Malf shaving cream?
Yeah. And it's a Vetiver shaving cream.
Ooh.
And it's exactly the way I wanted it. It has a little freshener in it. The blade glides like on a ski slope. It's perfect.
That was your vanity project,
I guess.
Yes,
exactly. Wow. It's a metal tube. It's just what I wanted.
I'm sure there's a cult following of
this. And then, yeah, actually there is growing.
Yeah.
This hand cream, and there is an aftershave balm that we have, which is, in fact, a woman's serum that I sort of devoided into a super deluxe aftershave balm. I think if I was wearing it every day around my eyes, it would make me look much younger. but there is something so that the beard can grow more straight.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yes, so it's really become like a men's product. So it's, I use these absolutely every day.
Okay.
So that's my beauty products.
Wonderful.
We're going to wrap up with a quick lightning round game.
My God.
You ready to play a game?
Sure, you ready? It's really fun and
quick. I gave it a name.
Oh, what's the name of the game?
One note.
Oh, I love that, Jen.
Thank you.
One note. Okay, so we're just going to give you a little scenario or a feeling, and you tell us what fragrance, note, hence one note, it makes you think of. Oh, my God, you're pouring more water.
Yeah, yeah, I have to like, sort of...
He's stressed out.
Yeah, I know.
Recover before
you'll,
I even
he's like, you didn't give an example then?
So, like, yeah, so, like...
Tokyo, I would say. And then you would give your one note, which is cherry blossom.
Perfect.
I don't know if that's right.
Okay, ready? Springtime in Paris.
The subway. Subway is the smell of Paris.
Okay.
The metro. Not very sexy.
Now, what do you say about winter in New York City?
It's fresh air. It's that icy fresh air that I love.
Mm. I like it too. Your home.
My home smells of Café Society. Café Society is a scent that I made literally for myself.
Oh.
And we have those perfume guns.
Yeah.
This is what my home smells
Ooh.
Of.
Oh, wow. But we can't get it as lay people.
Of course you can.
You can.
Oh, I thought he said he made it just for himself.
You know what? I made it for myself for a long time.
Okay.
And I'm so vain that I ended up selling it.
Okay, this next one's kind of hard. It's a feeling.
Happiness.
Well, Lily of the Valley, a bit cheesy, but
always
works.
Okay, what about sadness then? Then we'll get off the feelings.
The smell of rain.
Oh, okay. Church. What does the church make you think of?
Oh, frankincense.
Yeah.
That's easy.
That was an easy one, sorry.
Yeah.
The backstage of a theater.
Dust.
Mm. What about?
It never smells good.
Yeah, what about the front house of like an opera house or theater?
Oh, Tuberose, Shalimar. Mm. You know, it goes. It's a kaleidoscope.
That's nice. Look what I put last.
This is
so cute.
Sweet. This is really cute. This is really cute. Love.
Love. Oh, God.
my
wife.
Lily of the
Valley. My wife wears Portrait of a Lady, so it's very grand love.
Oh, I love that. That's really nice.
I can't wait to smell it.
Thank you so much
for
coming.
Oh, pleasure. That was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Time to raise a wand, but first I have to lower a wand, because it was around this time last year that I raised a wand to my favorite winter fruit, the clementine. And I just have to say, the clementines this season have been lackluster, in my opinion.
I haven't really had any good fruit this season.
Then I feel bad because I'm like, I bet you Florida had some cold snap last year or something, or like bad environmental thing, and that's the reason. Sorry, citrus growers of Florida.
Yeah.
So lower a wand to the clementines, but
Raise a wand. You're never going to believe that I'm on board with this product. Frank Body Lip Scrub. Can you believe I'm raising a wand?
Why would I not believe that?
Because I feel like Lip Scrub is one of those products that Jen 1.0 back in 2017 would have been like, Lip Scrub. Who needs lip scrub? Just use a washcloth.
I use a lip scrub.
Okay, well, a lot of them just feel like hurty and itchy and make my lips like red and inflamed. Mm. And then I'm like, what's the point of lip scrub? But I met with the founders of Frank Body. It's that Australian coffee scrub body brand. Mm. And their coffee scrub's delightful. It will make your bath a mess. But the lip scrub has little coffee grains in it and sugar. And it's super melty and like butter. And it's just like, I feel like I'm giving myself a little treat at the end of the day. And I just slough off the flakes. And it's just really makes my lips super smooth. So raise a wand to Frank Body's lip scrub.
Slough it off.
How about you? What are you raising a wand to?
Right, I'm going to raise a wand to a product that I did mention on the podcast, but I did not give it a proper raise a wand, and it deserves it. It really deserves it. The Christopher Buckle Exposure Matte Warming Powder. Now, when Christopher came into my office about like 6 months ago with this product, he used it on me, and then they left me with a version of it that was not my shade. And it was, I don't like gratuitously call things in if I don't think I'm really going to like love them and use them. I stalked his publicist being like, I need what he used on me.
I need the warming powder.
I need the warming powder and in light, which there's two shades. There's like a light and there's deep and there's light.
Which one do you think Mariah uses?
I don't know. Maybe she uses like different ones for like how tan she wants to be, because I feel like she kind of goes like lighter and darker depending on like her look. But the light is so, I'm telling you, this is not like, I've used all the best bronzers. I've used Guerlain Terracotta. I've used NARS Laguna. I've used them all. Too Faced, bum, bum, bum. This is a sheerness that's not like, it's not a bronzer. It's a warming powder. It just makes you look alive. I used it today. I went to a meeting. Someone said, Jessica, you look so rested. It's the warming powder.
Wait, didn't you get hit on today on the street too?
No, that was last week.
Did you have the warming powder on?
I did have a lot of makeup on that day.
I'll toot your horn for you.
Thank you.
Somebody said she looked like Julianne Moore.
Thank you. You know what? I did have the warming powder.
There you go.
Because I woke up late and I just threw that on. Because I throw in the warming powder and a red lip and I look done.
Here you go, guys. Get some warming powder.
Any red lip of your choice, but use this warming powder. Just zhuzh, 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 you're done. It is so freaking light. It is about $32 on QVC.com.
The end.
Thank you so much for listening. We're growing because of people like you telling your friends and fam and all that. But if you really want to help us out, which would be amazing, please go over to iTunes and write us a little review or just throw us some stars.
5, please.
That would be incredible.
And if you want to know where to find any of the people or places or things we talked about, go to fatmascara.com and check out our blog. You can follow us on all the social channels at fatmascara or email us at info@fatmascara.com.
We'll even read your letters on the air.
So profesh.
So profesh.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
A change of seasons means adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow, or all of the above on the same day. This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. With all-condition traction and materials and features to keep you comfy and dry no matter what, you'll be ready for anything. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.